Ram Dass's grandson, like so, resembling. Wonderful, wonderful soul. He and his wife Sheila owned a home. They built on this whole back section just for having bhajan there every Thursday night. And Sheila, if you saw some of the videos, she's playing the cymbals in the background, and their son Deepak is playing the tablas. And wonderful to be there. Wonderful memories. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Position that God and Guru has given me, I get to see most everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I thought I'd share with you a little bit of the good. And this is something that Peter Schultz sent to me this morning. Dearest David, recently there has been a growing desire within me to become a real yogi, one who lives in the presence of God constantly. In my case, I still need to operate in the world, but the idea is to always be with God, no matter what the outside circumstances or responsibility. The yogi I am always identified with is the one I discovered in the very beginning when I was just 14, Paramahansaji. His descriptions are so charming. He is clever, witty, and often makes me laugh, but always there is that deference to the divine. I am rereading the autobiography on my Kindle, and it is so delightful. I am savoring every story, experience, and word. I just finished reading a story early this morning of how, right after Yogananda graduated from high school, his older brother Ananda sent him and friend with one-way tickets by train to a nearby town with nothing, no money, no introductions, no support. The challenge was to show his younger brother the importance of money and how he should start thinking about his worldly responsibilities. If the two young men could eat their regular meals and make it back to the older brother, Ananta's house, the next day by midnight, without having to beg or steal, then Ananda would acknowledge that God was providing for his saintly younger brother. But if not, Yogananda would have to admit the importance of worldly support and start thinking about a, quote, career, a real career. Young master accepted the challenge instantly and with great conviction. Well, the story just unfolds beautifully, with master and his friend taking care of at every turn. Complete strangers befriend them out of nowhere and insist that they attend a beautiful banquet prepared for two princes that couldn't show up at the last minute. The banquet is just fabulous and one of the best meals either young man has ever had the pleasure of partaking of. Then later in the day, a young man takes them on a tour of the city, buying their evening meal and buys their train tickets home. But before he does, he insists Yogananda is his guru from a vision he had. And at that young age, Master initiates the newfound devotee into Kriya Yoga in a secluded spot outside the train station, probably his first initiate. And then they take the train back to their home city and enter Ananta's house just before midnight. Well-fed and delighted from their trip, Ananta extracts the details from the friend to get an impartial description of events and is surprised by what he hears, then becomes very serious. He admitted he didn't realize the depth of spiritual supply and demand, and that's when I started to cry. He then asked his little brother, Yogananda, to initiate him into Kriya Yoga, an almost unheard of event in India for an older brother to acquiesce to a younger brother's greater wisdom. I stopped reading there and got all choked up because I realized once again how much God takes care of me at every turn. It's amazing. God is like a doting mother to me, providing this detail and that, and all the while loving me. And the only reason that it is not a constant flow is because of me shutting the door, thinking other things, putting worldly pursuits first, and in so doing, turning my back on the essence of everything good. So I'll be meditating along with you tonight down here in my little hermitage with one sole request to God. Please fill me up with your presence. Make yourself more alluring than any temptation. Become everything to me in every moment. Make the coming year the one where I am transformed into one that lives and breathes and moves for you. That's what I want. To gain my sustenance from the all-pervading spirit, just like Yogananda did. To make every moment full of God. To live in the glory of his presence. I know you work hard every day to compel us in the direction, and I can't thank you enough for that. It is the greatest service any human being can do for another. Thank you always, my friend. I will not be with you tonight in body, but I will be there with you in spirit. What an uplifted spirit it can be. Love always, Peter. Isn't that a wonderful letter? Just recently, I had a phone call, and somebody was doubting whether an individual that I was citing, who was not financially well off, had physical problems, was getting older in life, and was reporting that they were living in bliss, in joy. And the person was sincerely doubting. They're overlooking something. They're not seeing the reality that I see, because if they did, they would be afraid. They would be thinking, what's going to happen to me? Who's going to take care of me? How will I subsist? And so on. It's an amazing thing when you begin to turn your life over to God. And you begin to think not how you're going to necessarily earn every penny that you get. It's not that we're not practical. Master, in a letter to Mother, referred to one man who was an inventor. And he said to remind him to be practical and that he had to earn his living as well as tinkering with his inventions, which he would hope one day would be able to sustain him. And so spiritual masters are practical in this sense, that there is something to be paid to this world. But that should not, in any way, in any small way, take away from the fact that the great giver in life is always flowing to us, is always looking to provide for us. Sometimes we think it is good luck, or being born into the right family, that will bring us great prosperity. We don't realize that we are born into the family of God from the very beginning. Whatever our station in life, whatever our material family is, it makes little or no difference. Because The infinite is our father and our mother, our brother and sister, our children, our everything. Reminded of the incident where Jesus was sitting with his disciples and his mother sent word that she was outside and would he admit her? And as a lesson to the disciples, he said, "You are my mother, you are my father, you are my brother and my sisters. All those who do the will of the Father are my family. Nobody gets special entrance." Mother reminded me on a couple of different occasions before she left the body that just because someone was her child or grandchild or related to her in some way, in no way gave them any special privileges. All are equal before the sight of God. And therefore, we can enter into this life standing up straight because we are the embodiment of the living God. We are made in the likeness and the image. And it doesn't make any difference what family you were born into, what your background is, what you've done in past lifetimes. Makes no difference whatsoever. It is all for you. Everything. Everything that God is. And when you make your claim upon God, then you can have everything that he is, because you are in him and he is in you. I thought that I would read from a talk by Paramahansa Yogananda. This was recorded on June 27, 1943, and it's entitled, "How to Do What You Want, Not Guided by Your Moods." And I'd like to remind you of the date, 1943, was there was a world war that was raging at the time. So there are a lot of things going on. He begins, "The steam is invisible, but when condensed it becomes visible. So the infinite is personal and impersonal and invisible, but it becomes personal and visible by our devotion's frost. It is the infinite that has become very personal and finite in every finite thing that you can see, the marks of the infinite, the invisible one. It is said, the tree came from the seed and the seed came from the tree. But which came first? We are only a link in the chain of life, and the beginning and the end are infinite. Only the middle is visible. Therefore, God, who is infinite, has become finite. Therefore, the infinite can be finite, because after all, this is God's dream. Every finite matter is the expression of God. You don't know it is God, and that is your mistake. To the wise man, the form of the demon and the divine man are the same, because he sees only the one God. Just as the man in the theater sees both the evil man and the hero are the result of the one beam of light thrown on the screen, so the divine man sees nothing but the infinite light in all things." This is radical thinking. It may not be to us because we have gotten the teachings from Mother, from Master, from Papa, that this universal vision, but really, you think about the world does not think this way. It does not see with equal vision that everything comes from the one light. So you might ask yourself, what about evil then? What about when people are harmed? What about when there are misdeeds that are done? And from a human standpoint, we would certainly all agree that there are things that are done that are cruel. There are things that are done that cause great pain and suffering, and from a human standpoint, we can agree to it to that point. But what Master is referring to here is not the individual who is looking out through human eyes. Rather, they've awakened the divine vision inside of them. And as a result of that, they have been transformed. When they look out through their two eyes, they see a divine manifestation. They see the purity of God manifesting in everything. Krishna said that he is equally manifest in the God-man, in the dog, in the manure, in the earth and the tree, in every single thing. And so when your mind is purified, you too can have that kind of vision of this world. Now, it's not something that you can just make up. It's not something that you can just parrot back and say everything is God when you haven't really realized it. Ramakrishna one time was speaking to a pundit, and the pundit came to the realization somehow that he was a divine incarnation, that Ramakrishna was a divine incarnation. And he named him so. He said, "You are the same as Chaitanya." And Ramakrishna said, "Don't say it so." He said, "Somebody did something to upset me, and I got very angry earlier today. So don't tell me that." But who is to say that a divine incarnation can't get angry? Jesus, it is said, became very angry in the temple. He saw there that what should have been a place of prayer was being utilized to generate income, not just for the stall keepers, but for the temple itself. It's so easy within organizations and within churches and synagogues that everything becomes about money. Surely, we have to consider these things when you're trying to support a church, when you're trying to support a whole movement, and it becomes very easy to get sidetracked. It becomes something about organizations, about people getting together to form groups in order to do this and that and the other thing. And then it becomes about name and position and what kind of clothing do you wear and where do you sit. Well, I grew up in what is called the Methodist Church, but there is another church called the Free Methodist. And my understanding was that, like many of the churches of the time, you could pay so much money, and that guaranteed you a certain pew. And the more money you gave, the closer you sat up to the front. And this was a place of status, place of stature then. Wore the nicest clothes, sat up in front, everybody saw you. Can you see how it begins to get in there? And everything becomes about money and about ego and so on. It's a very pernicious thing. When Mother asked me to teach, she asked me to make three vows. She said, first of all, don't charge for anything that you do for God. Don't form any organization, no board of directors, nothing. And third, not to advertise. Because she wanted to keep these teachings pure, that if somebody came, they came because somebody else brought them. That the topic is not around how do we support the church, how do we pay for this or that or the other thing. That our full attention should be upon God. Our full attention should be upon God. It was when I was down at Prem's, I was showing the video of that earlier, and it was there that God prompted me to leave my vocation and to set out and just to serve God only through this means and this form. And I had no idea how I would be supported or how I would eat or anything else. I just knew that this is something that I must do. And so I gave notice and I made all the preparations to leave where I was. And Peter, bless his heart, built a beautiful little apartment for me. And so it all began in this way. Now, I didn't know beforehand. And people would ask me, well, how are you going to leave? I don't know. I didn't seem to feel concerned about it. Because by that time, I had seen demonstration of God's abundance and how he cared for each and every one of us. One time, I had overdrawn my bank account. And I had no money to cover it with, and I didn't know what to do. And so I was going to be bouncing checks, and I really didn't want to be doing that. And that very day, I got a check from a company from New York that I had never even heard of before. And it was for the amount that I overdrew plus $5. And I immediately went down and deposited the check. And so everything was covered. And so you might say my good name was preserved. I didn't ruin my credit in that way. I never did know why that check was sent, who it came from, really. I just knew that it came at the perfect time, in the perfect moment. And so I have seen demonstration after demonstration, where God is taking care of things far beyond my own knowing and my own power. Now, this is not a recipe for just living willy-nilly. It is a recipe that has as its most basic ingredient, surrender to God. When we are in deep attunement, striving with everything in our power to attune ourselves to God, to surrender ourselves every moment, everything to Him, then we can rely upon Him for everything in our lives. This is not the person who just sits on their hands and says, well, God will take care of me. When they haven't done the work to attune themselves to God, they haven't really surrendered themselves. It's just a convenient way of thinking in that moment because they don't know what to do. And so by your total surrender to God, you can then throw your lot completely onto Him and watch Him. Watch as He orchestrates this entire world. It doesn't mean that you will be rich. It doesn't mean that you'll be swimming in anything other than the presence of God, and that He will see to everything that you need. And so the key in there is that inward attunement. We can't fake it. We can't just say, well, I'm doing what I want to do, but when I'm in trouble, then I turn to God. Doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Surely we can always turn to God. It's never too late in that sense. But we can't expect God to mitigate everything in our lives if we're only using Him as a backstop. We must use Him as a backstop, as a forestop, as a middle stop in every aspect of our lives. So let us continue with Master here. Those who think of a personal God will see God has a finite form, but the idea is when He will come in the form of the entire infinite will be throbbing in that form. Just as the radio vibration, which is spread over thousands of miles of space, vibrate through one radio, so the infinite can vibrate through one little form. It is easier to think of God like that. I have been for a long time watching that, but lately I have not been devotional at all. I only say, thou and I are one. I cannot have any existence separate from you. How could it be possible? I see thou and I are one. You see how Master's own mind evolves with God, and this is the way that it is. When you feel your oneness with God, He takes you on a great journey, and in truth, your life is not your own anymore. That can be frightening to many people to think that their life is not their own anymore, except when you begin to experience that God is living His life through you, thinking through you, experiencing through you. Then you go on to this grand journey. You feel yourself transformed inside, and you feel God moving through different moods through you. They're not the moods like you used to get, where you would go into a down mood if things were not going well, and you would go to another up mood at another time. But rather, they are divine moods. They are the movement of divine consciousness through you. And there is a time when you will focus upon God with a form. My own inclination was not to approach God as with a form. I thought of Him as the divine presence that I felt within me. From the very beginning of meeting my guru, I felt the tremendous power of God in her, but not just in her, because the power of God in her was awakening the God in me. I felt that power in myself. Excuse me. And this is a great difference. A truly God-realized being will awaken God within you. You'll feel that vibration. You'll feel that upliftment. It's not about hero worship. It's not about worshiping God in a particular form, in a guru or an image or anything else. It's about what awakens the divine presence within you and then purifies your vision and your mind that you see God everywhere about you. We have all been to places, I think, where we have felt a special vibration, where we have felt something stirring inside of us. It can be a person, it can be a place, it can be anything at all that is manifesting a higher consciousness. And through that awakening consciousness in us, we are brought closer into God consciousness ourselves. When an egotist is parading as a spiritual teacher, it only brings you to their doorway, but the doorway is closed because the ego keeps it that way. It wants the attention. The ego is wanting to be adored or have power. But when a realized being awakens that God nature in you and you feel drawn to the God nature within that one stands as an open doorway. And as you approach it, you don't go into the personality of the individual, but rather you pass straight on through and you go into an expanded state of awareness, the infinite consciousness, God without a form. And therefore, the form has been utilized in its highest way. It has awakened the divine nature in you and brought it into the divine nature of yourself and then universalized it as beyond all name, all form. Everything, as Master says, that we see in this material creation is in the middle, but it's not the beginning and it's not the end. Those are God's provinces. He is the Alpha, He is the Omega, He is the beginning and He is the end. And He's actually everything in between as well. If I could only share for a moment the tremendous vision, the tremendous bliss and upliftment that God gives to me, that it would shake you to the very foundations, because you would see that you are not missing out on anything when you go with God. Rather, you are gaining everything. You become a nothing in the sense that you are now not your old self, but you are divinity itself, manifesting in a human form. Now, this may sound like sacrilege to some, but it is the truth. It is the God's truth, because it is that true that we are made in the image and likeness of the divine. It's absolutely true. And yet we parade around as tiny little individuals, so concerned with our small little world that we have created around us, that we don't realize the tremendous nature that is just seeking to awaken inside of us. The reason for all of us being here, gathering in the way that we do, is to awaken that divine nature. And then you take these teachings, you take this awakening within yourself, and you take it into your own life, and you put it to work. You see it manifesting. You see yourself being lifted up through the day and through the night. If this is not occurring, it is because you are not really giving it your all. You are holding back. And this is the human ego's nature, to hold back, because it knows that this is the death of itself. We have just recently celebrated the birth of the Christ into creation. Now, Christ was the firstborn of every creature. And Christ doesn't come in just a form. He's not an individual who has long hair and a robe and sandals that he wears and just lived only 2,000 years ago. The Christ nature is really the carpenter of the universe, has created everything that is embedded in everything that is. And so when we read these scriptures, when we listen to the teachings of Jesus, it should not be drawing us just to his own individual form. It is true, we can be very uplifted by meditating upon that form. But we should always see that he is drawing us into his ultimate divine nature. He wants us to share in the same divine consciousness that he was living in when he incarnated into this world. And this is true for all spiritual masters. They want you to experience it for yourself. Continuing with Master, mind nor intellect nor ego, chitwa, I am he. Mind nor intellect nor ego, chitwa, I am he. Beyond the flights of fancy, fearless am I. Permeating all the realms of light, unseen as I. Bondage do I care, nor freedom do I crave, for I am ever free. Blessed Spirit, I am he. You meet God as joy, absolute existence and absolute consciousness, and you remain in that state. Everything that is, your own personality, is gone. That is what it means. Imperfect union with God. You have one with God. You can't say you worship him. You are one with him. That conception is so marvelous. So whenever the idea of sin or trouble gets you, anchor yourself in the divine. In worship only, you think of yourself as separate from God. That is the dangerous worship of God. You must drown your personality into God. God is all. I am just the manifestation. He is I. It is not right to say I am God, but it is all right to say God is myself. The wave cannot become the ocean, but the ocean has become the wave. As soon as you say I, that is personal worship, and it is dangerous. To say I am God is wrong. But to say God is I is all right. Egoists cannot realize that. But when you merge yourself in the Supreme Being, then you have that consciousness. And in that Supreme Consciousness, when your mind becomes anchored in him, all ego is gone. But when you think you are with him and continue to say terrible things, you are in delusion. When you merge in the infinite, there is nothing that is ego. All things become pure. The greatest evil is not to see God as manifested himself in the world. Remember, if you are paralyzed and diseased in the body and still don't give up and continue to say, God is I, you will be liberated. Even when death is at your door, if you can remain that in that consciousness, determined to do it more now, and it will be done. Don't put it off. As soon as you say, tomorrow I will conquest, tomorrow will never come. But think, today is gone, and it will be gone, because mind is all powerful. When the thought sword of wisdom destroy the thought of moods, and you must always remember, it is your fault if some trouble comes. Most of the time you will be surprised to see that when trouble comes, it is because you are not acting or thinking right. If you take that attitude, you will get along with anyone. I have purposely mixed with those who have opposite views from me. I have conquered them. I have made it a point to do so. In a paradise, you can be miserable. And in Hades, you can be a god. That is all done by your consciousness. If you feel insulted, everyone will insult you. If you feel no one can insult you, no one can. I never saw anyone insult Master. He was above hatred and insult. He conquered by his wisdom, by his power. Can you sense the uplifted mood that Master was in when he was speaking like this? He is identified with that pure spiritual consciousness and power, that love, that everything. You see, this is the whole thing. We can listen to spiritual talk. We can read good books. But if we are not swimming in this ocean of Sat Chit Ananda, then we have not really achieved what we have come to do. We must release ourselves. People imprison themselves by their own thoughts, by their own attachments. But there is no one who is keeping you in a state of separation from God, except for your own lack of spiritual adventurousness, your own intense desire to experience God and to know God. And so, as we think about entering into the new year, let us think about God as our very self. It is He who has become you. And He is manifesting as you. He is speaking as you. He is thinking of you. You open yourself completely to Him. You leave all personality behind because all personality is limiting, you see. And so we strive to reach out. We strive to really manifest the divine being because He is already present inside of you. He is everywhere about you. You know, the very air that we breathe is filled with bliss. Every single part of creation is vibrating with divine consciousness. This is how it is that highly realized spiritual masters really see that everything is God. It is not in a human sense that everybody acts like God, but everyone is a manifestation of divine consciousness. And through this transformation, you are also transformed. You become the very expression of divine consciousness. Do not imagine it is far away. That is a trick of the ego mind. Feel that God is manifesting in you when you move, when you walk, when you speak, when you think. Manifest that divinity. Feel that it is God who has become I. And radiate that light. Jesus said the most marvelous thing, and if I be lifted up, will lift up this entire world with me. Now we look around at this world and we don't think that perhaps He was right in that. But He is correct. We are all linked together like chains. And when one is lifted up, it draws everybody up. But not everybody goes at the same rate, at the same speed. But everybody is being drawn up. And the more effort that you make, the more spiritual attunement that you make, the more that you will lift this world up. Perhaps you never speak a word. There are many great masters who didn't speak at all. And yet they had that uplifting effect on this world. This is a brand new year. It's true, it's just one date out of the calendar that's been chosen as a new year. But let us utilize that. Let us put it to full use, that let it be a new birth. A new birth into a new consciousness. And as a result of that, that we may manifest that divinity everywhere about us and know the Sat Chit Ananda, the eternal self, pure consciousness, and the pure bliss of God. If you will do this, you will not be guided by lower moods, but only by the mood of God. Let us meditate for a few minutes. break now. Ring the bell when it's time to come back.